Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Crispy, crunchy, and nutritious. Yeah, this is Sixers Talk brought to you by Wilmington University. WilmU Works, Danny Palmels, and Paul Hudrick here. Thank you for all the subscriptions for NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. We appreciate those 5-star ratings, your comments. Please keep them coming. The story of the day yesterday came late in the evening. It was winding down in the second quarter. The first half was coming to a close. Joel Embiid implored Ben Simmons to shoot the basketball. The crowd stood to their feet. Josh Richardson told us after the game he didn't know what the heck was going on. But then he said, oh, and lo and behold, a few feet behind the arc, Ben Simmons strokes a three.
As our good friend Mark Zumoff would say, a healthy three.
A healthy three.
That was healthy.
Wish he was on the broadcast last night. He had a day off, which we had known about in advance. And Serena Williams and Ala Abdelnaby on the call. They were just as surprised. We listened to the radio call, and Tom McGinnis wasn't as surprised. He kind of was ho-hum about it.
It was more, really straight. He played straight.
But what really, I think, is getting under people's skin is the way Sixers Twitter reacted. Some people were calling it Bush League. Some people were calling it embarrassing. I had a friend of mine who said that his wife and daughter are going to get tired of him nagging them during games because while he normally watches a game and looks at Twitter during it, he's not going to be looking at Twitter because Sixers Twitter is revolting him that much because of the way that they've reacted to it. What do you make of the way people reacted to Simmons hitting the three? Of course, let's just get it out the way. It was never about him making three-pointers. It was about him taking jump shots wherever they were on the floor because he's been – wide open numerous times and wouldn't shoot the basketball. So it's never about him making a three. But based on everyone's reaction, that kind of gets lost in the sauce. But what do you make of the Sixers' Twitter reaction, first of all?
People have no joy in their lives.
Really?
You know?
That's how you feel?
Yes.
You,
just have fun.
You
aren't
embarrassed
a
little bit.
No. Who cares?
Okay.
Let people feel what they want to feel. I felt a sense of relief just covering the team. I felt a sense.
But you were in the arena, though.
This is all we talked about.
You were in the arena,
yes,
though.
I was.
And you got the vibe and feeling.
Sure.
So I'm sure that was a little like you kind of get swept away by that.
It was reminiscent of when Markelle Fultz hit that three in the home opener last year against the Bulls.
Who didn't look so bad against the Pistons the other night.
Listen, we can get into that if you want to, but I've seen Markelle Fultz do that on an NBA floor before. I've seen him look pretty good. But
yeah. But go ahead.
Jump.
Let's stay on one thing.
But no, I have absolutely zero problem with Sixers Twitter freaking out over it. This is all anyone has talked about. It's all the media has asked about. He's gotten frustrated by it. The team's gotten frustrated by it. Brett Brown's gotten frustrated by us asking it. It's been a story since...
We saw Ben get frustrated a few days ago when asked about it.
It's been a story since he entered the league. So, no, I have absolutely zero problem with Sixers Twitter freaking out. Freak out. Have fun. This season's going to be a lot of fun for fans. Why are we trying to kill joy? Like, what are we doing? Why are we trying to be a buzzkill?
You know what kind of annoyed me, though? And it wasn't really – had nothing to do with Sixers Twitter. The fact that the Ben Simmons shooting and making a three – got lumped in with the fact that Boban and Steven Adams also shot and made threes. Like, that's not the same caliber.
No, it
of,
is not.
Of
Boban's
shooting.
Made him.
Right.
Boban was like 2 of 4 with the Sixers last year.
But on top of that, stop disrespecting Ben. Like, he has shot threes innumerable times. We've talked about it on a podcast. You see him in practice and warm-ups. So I could see why he's annoyed by it. And I could also see why he didn't make a big deal about it because – he felt like, I do this all the time. It's not like a thing for me. I think that there might have been some ego involved with the fact that he wasn't shooting the jumpers, that he didn't want to, you know, look bad to people or,
sure.
Or, you know, he didn't want to feel like people were, you know, zeroing in on him on that thing or
if he shot it and it didn't look so good, then he would have to deal with the backlash. But it wasn't about him, the three-pointer. Let's just get that clear and concise. Like, it wasn't about the three-pointer. It was about him shooting jump shots. And when I see a Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons pick and roll and he shoots a jumper, that's when I'll probably jump out of my seat. You know what I'm saying? Like when it's useful for the team, like him taking a last-second heave at the end of the second quarter, I want to see him in the rhythm of the game.
It wasn't a heave. It was a jump shot. He walked right into it. He had the ball in his hands with the clock running. It wasn't like it was like this – it wasn't a heave. Well, it was a perfectly set jump shot.
It was a good jumper. It looked good. I mean, it wasn't Len Greer, left-handed, silky smooth. But what I'm trying to say is, like, the pressure of throwing up a shot at the end of the half is a lot different than, you know, coming down in a half-court set and then taking a 15-footer when we've never seen you do that before.
Forgive the term.
What?
But it's a process. It is.
Process.
It is a process. This is the first step of it. He needed to just take a shot, feel good about it, and to see it go through. And it was as Mike Scott said, it's cash out. It's pure swish, right? He needed to see that. Now we see, like you said, now we see where it goes from there. I know one thing. Like, I saw a lot of people commented on, and like, listen, when Ben Simmons warms up taking threes, yeah, I'm going to take a video of it, and yeah, I'm going to put it on Twitter. So, like, please don't comment. Oh, no, it's just warm-ups. Like, okay, I get it. It's warm-ups. I know it's warm-ups. I'm there. I understand that. So, first of all, let's get that out of there, which is funny because then he actually hits one. But a lot of fans were upset, and, like, they made a big thing because he didn't take one in the blue-white scrimmage. I was there. There was no real – like, if he would have taken one, it would have been forced.
Right.
Like, there was one point where he was trapped in the corner. Matisse Thybulle was, like, right on him, and fans were yelling, shoot. It's like, what are we doing here?
Just jump up and throw it
at
the rim.
It was like the Flyers on the power play. Like, just a bunch of people just yelling, shoot.
The little kid, though, with the reaction.
Awesome. I love
that. Oh, my God. When Ben shoots the three from the hash mark, that was pretty funny.
No, but, like – and, like, there were maybe two instances where Ben possibly could have taken a three in that game. One was a corner three where he was wide open, but he had the lane to himself, so he went in and dunked it. Like, what are you going to do? He's not going to pass up a dunk to take a three. That's absurd. Like, so it's just – I hear what you're saying, and that's going to – and you're right. Like, to me, what I looked at it was this is a step to a process where it's going to grow from here. And this is an encouraging sign to start. And I think that's why fans have they have a right to be excited about it. It is a first step.
You know what I noticed,
and a
though?
Big one.
But you know what I noticed is that he got the bucket off of him handling. Like he had a great rhythm. He had put the ball between his legs a few times. He had bounced it back and forth. Like, he had came into the front court, so his hands are warm. He's in rhythm, and he steps into the three and strokes it. Like, that's, you know, basketball 101. Like, he has the ball, gets it in rhythm, which leads me to the point that I noticed it when I was at training camp. He's got the ball on the string, bro. The handle is improved, man.
There was one play where he drew some oohs and ahs in, like,
man.
The second quarter. He was just kind of
– the handle
I
is improved,
very,
bro.
Very bad for the player on the
long
lines.
Yeah. He looks like a guy who has played basketball all summer. He looks like a guy whose confidence is elevated. He said it. He said he's fallen in love back with the game. But regardless of what that, you know, comment implies – just looking at him, you can see that the ball is, like, connected to his hand, and he has a rhythm with the rock that we kind of didn't see before because, you know, he's hitting hard crossovers, you know, changing direction. And I think that is, like, you know, I think he had 21 points, you know, against the Long Lions, but
– doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because what we saw was a confident – you know, Ben Simmons, who was going at dudes and just trying to make proper plays. You know, the dishes were there. You know, he's doing the no-look stuff. Like, I want the swagger, man. I want it all, and I think Ben is ready. Yeah, I see all-star number two for him. Maybe five all-stars?
He's going to make
all-stars on this roster?
The sky's the limit. On this roster? Five this year?
Five all-stars?
You want the whole starting five?
I'm asking.
I mean, I guess it's not crazy. But I don't think that can. I don't think it happens.
16 points for Josh Richardson last night. Again, it doesn't matter.
Hit three threes, 1 4-point play.
Yeah, I'm looking right, and that was right in front of, in the right corner.
It was in the right corner.
Yeah. You know, I'm just looking at his overall game now. as much as I enjoy watching him shoot the three, as much as I enjoyed watching just his savvy on the court, that layup package, man, just some of those shots and the way he, you know, flips it over his head or the hook or things like that, that's something I would like to see progress. I don't like the way he kind of finishes sometimes, particularly when, you know, his kind of body control or the way he is in the paint, it isn't always the smoothest delivery to get the ball in the basket.
The best game I ever saw him play was Game 6 here against Toronto.
What about it?
As far as like a game being like a big game and a big moment, he was sensational in that game. What I loved watching him in that game, he was taking it right into dude's chest. Mm-hmm. And like Siakam. Like
so see, going
he had
downhill.
He had Siakam on skates, and then he went right into his chest and finished right to the rim, to your point. And it's like, that's the guy, that's some Giannis stuff. That's what Giannis does. Giannis just goes right at dudes and goes right into their chest and then finishes.
That's why the Euro works so well.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I think I want to see more. I agree, and we've talked about it before on the pod where, yeah, the jump shot, you know, you want it to come, it probably needs to come, but the finishing has been something that's always kind of bothered me, that he's just not the greatest finisher at the rim a lot of times. And that has bothered. For a guy who's this big and strong
6'10",
and gifted,
exactly, the point I was going
to
make.
Yeah, he should be able to do that easily. And how often he gets into the paint.
And this isn't somebody like Joel Embiid who kind of picked up basketball late. This is a guy who's been playing hoops since the Fisher-Price court out in the front yard. You know what I'm saying? We've seen the video of him shooting with his dad on that little court. So you would expect him, and he's ambidextrous. So you would figure this was a guy, or amphibious, as Chris Webber would say. Mm-hmm. But this is a guy who you would think would have a little bit more finesse around the rim. I don't know if that'll ever come, though, because it doesn't seem to me like it's a natural thing for him to. I don't know how
you can
go
work
from
on
where he is now.
No, it's something you, because even Giannis, when Giannis first got in the league, he was just a freak that didn't know how to play basketball. Mm-hmm. He was a mess out there. He was all over the place, and he wasn't a great finisher. He developed that. So I think as he develops more and more, this year it's about the shot. It's about the shot getting better. It's about developing that a little more. Maybe next summer, if the shot comes this year, maybe next summer it's about the finishing. So I think sometimes we lose sight, too, the fact he's 23 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's so
fresh, 23 July.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because he's so talented, and because he's already made an all-star team, because the team has such high expectations, sometimes it gets lost how young he is. He's 23.
Think
about it. He's only a year older than Matisse Thybulle.
But he also, I think, brings some of that pressure onto himself because he's the guy who reportedly didn't finish his classes out at LSU, who also had a camera crew following him around.
I think he didn't finish.
Yeah, I heard that, but I wasn't quite sure. But so he didn't finish his classes. He didn't, had a camera crew following around. He puts out this documentary about, you know, his life and things like that. His dad's a pro player. So some of that comes with it. That comes with the Ben Simmons name, expectations, the pressure, and some of that he put on himself, as I said. But when I look at Ben, I see the growth, and that's all you can ask for, man. You see him getting better. You know, I kind of harp on that, you know, fall in love with the game again comment, because, you know, he's 23 years old. You had time to fall out of love with the game? You only been playing, you know, in this type of setting for, you know, what, 4 years now? So,
well, two years, and he sat out the 1 year.
Yeah.
But
I'm just thinking, high pressure, you know, LSU plus where he is now. Yeah.
No, but we talked about it on Media Day.
Yeah.
I think the fallout of love comment had a lot to do with what you're talking about, with all the hype and everything. I think he started viewing this as a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that did. It took a little bit of the joy out of it when he's more focused on being a brand and being this and all that. And I think now he's just playing basketball again. And I have to give him credit, because let's be real, Danny, you've been at a lot of availabilities with Ben. You've seen, you know, he could be short with people, man. He's done it in the past. He could be really short with the media.
And you better not boo him. Or maybe you should. Maybe that gives him the anger.
But I'm just saying, you know, that's something that's in his past. He's done that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this year, he has made a conscious effort to be more forward-facing with the media, to be a little bit more thoughtful with his answers. Obviously, there are some reporters who rub him the wrong way, what have you, some questions that still rub him the wrong way, which, you know, I'm not even going to get into all that. But for the most part, he has taken the idea of being a leader very seriously, it seems like. He understands that, you know, you're an all-star and there's, you know, as you said, there's stuff that comes with that. And I think the leadership thing is a part of it. You could tell him and Josh Richardson the bond that they're building. Two media availabilities in a row. Ben and Josh actually did them together. After the blue and white scrimmage, they did their media availability together. And then Monday after practice.
On some Jimmy and Joel type.
Yeah, yeah. That was my first thought. It was very similar to that. So to see them both kind of develop that early chemistry and to know that Ben's a part of that. Al Horford, who is, I mean, you talk about a guy who's a professional and a leader. Like, he has complimented Ben on his leadership and how vocal he's been and how assertive he's been and, you know, making sure guys are in the right places and doing what they need to be doing. So
Al Horford, who hit more made threes last year than Jimmy Butler, by the way.
Yeah, he shot better percentage too. That's what's funny. Like, you know what's funny? You bring that up, and that's a little off topic, but like, people talk about the spacing and the shooting and all that. People forget Jimmy Butler wasn't a great three-point shooter. Not only that, he admitted he hates taking them. He does not like taking threes. It's not a part of his game. After the game, it was a game two in Toronto and they won. He took 10 threes in that game. That was the most he's ever taken in his career. I asked him the next day, did you realize that was the most you've taken in your career? And he said, yeah. He's like, they just told me. He's like, and I hate taking them.
And I don't think that's a hate taking them as in when Joel said that he doesn't like shooting.
This
is a legitimate.
Like. No, he hates, and exactly. But you look at a guy like Al, and I'm not here to slander Jimmy Butler. The point is, though, without Horford.
He had 10 points in his Heat debut.
Yeah. Jimmy Butler's a great basketball player. We ain't going to debate that on this podcast.
And, you know, I would go to war with him. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think we feel the same way. So, anyway.
But with Al Horford, he's going to take whatever shot's there. If you're going to give him a wide open three, he's going to gladly take it. If you're going to give him a baseline jumper, he's gladly going to take it. If you're going to put a 6'6 guy on him in the post, he's going to play bully ball and take that guy to the hole. Like, Al Horford will take what's kind of there, whereas I don't know if, you know, like, I don't know that Jimmy Butler was that kind of guy that would do that.
And you know what I see from this team, just watching him on the court last night, and not, you know, forget about the opponent. They're almost injury proof in a way. They got a guy would
hold up.
A guy, listen, they got a guy who can help if Joel's not out, right? With Al, they could slide guys into that four position. A few guys that can play that. If Ben's out, they got Josh or Trey or whoever can run the point. They could move Ben to the four. They could have a varying backcourt if they want to put Tobias at the three. Put Tobias.
They have
at
a lot
four.
Of options.
It's a lot of options, bro. I mean, if an injury happen.
Wait, weren't you the guy on this podcast that was saying you were worried about the bench? Not that long ago.
You know what? And that brings us to our next thing. And that is, not only is Matisse Thybulle looking like what you said, making Elton Brand look like a genius. We talked about him battling for minutes with Furkan and Zaire Smith. Forget about
battle's over.
You know, listen, Mike Scott and James Ennis better be looking out for them taking their playing time. That's the type of impact Matisse Thybulle can have on the court, seems like to me. He might be the first one off the bench.
I know a lot of people. Last night, him and James Ennis were the first ones off the bench.
Yeah,
they
man.
Checked in first. I don't know how many people actually got to watch the blue-white scrimmage. I think the Sixers streamed it. But if you didn't watch it, Matisse Thybulle in that second quarter, it was – I can't even put into words how ridiculous he was. Mm-hmm. He wrecked the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he – it was supposed
Ben
to be –
Ben said he hates him, bro.
And so, like, the blue team was the starters, right? And then the white team, which – Tobias was on, Thybulle was on, was kind of like the second unit team. Like, it was Matisse, Trey Burke, James Ennis, whatever. Yeah. So, like, that game was set up for the blue team basically to win. The white team took the lead late in the second quarter because Thybulle, if I had to guess, he got his hands on 10 balls defensively, and I'm not exaggerating. 10.
How long was Elton watching this kid?
The two things that stood out to me when I watched him in that second quarter. Ben Simmons steamrolling on a fast break. Steamrolling. A play that no one, like, he just gets
no one would step in front of him, yeah.
Stepped in front of him and stripped him. Took it the other way. Next possession, another fast break. Howell Neto and Simmons, 2-on-1 against Thybulle. Breaks it up, back the other way. The next possession, Josh Richardson in transition looks like he's got a wide open three on the wing.
And that's when he chased down.
He came out of freaking nowhere.
And he was on the ground when that play went the other direction. He got off the ground and ran down the court to block Josh Richardson's
jump
shot.
And it went a couple rows deep. Like, he swatted that thing. And that was like he was just he was a game wrecker. That's the best way I can think to describe it. He wrecked the game. It was insane.
How long did Elton said he had been watching him though?
Forever.
He said like since high school. Yeah, he had been watching him.
Yeah.
So
it's funny actually because
we got some real talent evaluators now in the Sixers organizations. People who can really find some people.
It's funny because when the Sixers lost to the Raptors, mm-hmm. I began my draft research in earnest. And Thibault was one of the guys that really hopped up on my radar. One of the guys that, like, a lot of people said could go
because
around the range.
Because you had heard something or because he just pleased your eye?
Well, a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. I saw, like, one game where he played in Washington, and I was like, oh, this kid's got a little juice. I didn't know if it was – but then, you know, after doing a little research and actually going back.
Right. He's a nation of steals. Like,
I highlighted this one play, and it's funny because I had just sent – for some reason, I had sent it to Dave Zangaro, who does an excellent job covering the Eagles, and you're going to want to check out
– the Eagles Eye Podcast Dave Zangaro and Ruben Frank.
But I sent him this gif of a play that Thibault made where he broke up a play and then, like, dunked it the other way. And, like, the speed – I was like, this dude is like Ed Reed on a basketball court because he's just a ball.
And
unbelievable.
You hear him after the game talking about how those – tip passes and transition baskets, he feel like all that correlates so much and rejuvenates the team and gives the crowd some oomph as well. So not only does he do it really well, he takes pride in it, and he values the role that he brings to the team as a defensive stalwart and a guy who can stroke it on the other end.
And
you hear Ben talk about it, he believes in him. Ben thinks it's lights out when he shoots the basketball. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's affecting the team. We talked about him in the last podcast. We talked to Matisse in the last podcast. Like, so easy to get along with, easy to like. I don't know, bro.
Genuine kid. And it's cool too because like you get this glimpse of him when you see him. He's still like a kid. Like he's a mature 22-year-old.
Right.
God forbid, we know what I was doing when I was 22.
But he's preserved his innocence. I don't know if he kind of has still,
innocence. That's the word.
He still has the youthfulness.
Yes.
That you wouldn't assume.
He's not jaded by the world.
Right. Somebody who's been through 4 years of college and went through this, you know, professional basketball avenue. He doesn't have that. The rawness, he hasn't been rubbed raw in that way, you know what I mean?
And he's just enjoying it. You just get to feel like he's just loving it. Like he's just loving the experience.
Jovial. He's just happy in a natural, happy way.
But he also knows he has a job to do, so it's cool. It's like he's a professional, but he's enjoying it, which these guys should. They should all enjoy it. They're getting to play a game for a living, as we've talked about many times. Like, just enjoy, you know, talk about Ben refining his joy. That's not going to be an issue for Matisse Thibault, I don't think, at any point.
Dreams come into reach at Wilmington University. WilMU helps working adults reach their career goals through accredited and affordable degrees and certificates. To reach new heights in your field, WilMU works. Find out why at wilmu.edu. So you look at Matisse, you look at Ben, Joel Embiid only plays a half. That's kind of what I was getting at when I mentioned that I felt like they were injury-proof because the objective here is to hand deliver Joel to the postseason. Am I right?
Yes.
So a friend of mine, you know, in a group text, they were getting at me because I made a post on my Instagram account about the Sixers starting five. Al Horford had this great photo of them. And I was like, how many championships? And he's like, oh my God, you forgot about the Lakers, the Clippers, Denver? Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, bro, their road to the Eastern Conference is they got one team to worry about. They're trying to hand deliver Joel Embiid to the postseason. The West is going to beat themselves up, going at each other. The Sixers have not, easy is in quotes, they have a pretty easy road to get to the pinnacle of the conference in order to try to get into to the finals. So to me, you know, regardless of what will happen after this season when Kevin Durant is healthy and him and Kyrie are going at it, the Sixers this season have built themselves up with the best starting five, arguably. The Clippers have a really good one. Denver does as well, maybe Utah, whoever else you want to look at. But the Sixers have the easiest road to get to the pinnacle and have fallen short in a way that anything beyond getting to the pinnacle would be considered underachieving. So to me, it shapes up. You know, we have a bet now, he and I, and I hope he's going to deliver when the Sixers make it to the finals. But I just don't see it as challenging a road. Again, challenging is in quotes because this is the NBA and anything can happen on any given night. But it's just a favorable situation, I think, for the team playing in South Philly. Am I wrong? Am I seeing it the wrong way? Am I too optimistic? Like, what do
no,
you think?
It's got to be a make it to the finals, or the Sixers have already said that. That's their mentality. Do you is make see, it to the finals or bust.
Right, but does the path look clear to
of
you?
Of course. Did,
yeah, okay.
I think if you're a person who watches NBA basketball regularly, the East is a two-team race, and if I had to pick the team right now, it would be the Sixers. A lot can happen. I don't know how that's all going to shake out. You know, they lose Brogdon. I tend to be of the belief that I think Eric Bledsoe is pretty overrated, if I'm being very honest. I don't think he should have made the all-defensive team. I think that's silly.
Yeah, I would have rather signed Brogdon than Bledsoe.
Yeah, yeah, I think Chris Middleton, if anything, might still be a little underrated. I think he's a pretty damn good player. I love them bringing him back.
How'd that work out on Team USA, though, with Middleton?
When he's playing with Giannis, it's a different story. But yeah, I mean, they still have the league MVP on their team, so it's still going to be that. It's again clearly a two team race, but if I had to put the Sixers starting five, it's hard to say that there's a more complete starting five than theirs. There is a deeper one. There are teams that have better play, like the Lakers have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. That's great. The Clippers have Kawhi and Paul George.
Kind of old LeBron.
And you know what? I still think Anthony Davis is like he's a great player, but he is like a scotch overrated to me.
Bro,
a scotch.
If he goes down with any injury, where is that team going to go?
Oh, they're screwed.
Yeah.
With Cousins out too now.
You're working on a good article on a website that people should check out at NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com because you watched last night's game and it just gave you a great thought about, bro, between Simmons and Josh Richardson, this could be the best defensive backcourt in the NBA.
I went through, who could be better? Who could be a better defensive duo, starting duo in the entire NBA?
Well, you brought up the Clippers when we were talking about this before we started
the pod. But
you know what,
though? They're likely, and I was talking to our guy, Brian Brennan, who does a great job producing
Sixers producer,
pre and post.
Yeah.
And the Clippers are probably going to start Shannon. Landry Shamet's probably going to start next to Pat Bev.
Wow.
And they're going to go Kawhi at the three, Paul George at the four. That's probably going to be their starting.
Wow.
That's going to be their stars. So,
see, to me, that beats up Paul more defensively than I would like. I would like him to be freer.
I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think he'll be just
fine. I really enjoyed seeing him guard perimeter players last year with the Oklahoma State
Thunder.
But
again, we talked – this is
a deserved MVP candidate.
The four is not what it used to be. This isn't – Karl Malone is not walking through that door.
True.
This is not that NBA anymore. Plus, what makes those players, Kawhi and Paul George, so great, and what makes like a Ben Simmons so great? Switching. They can switch on everything because they have those two.
Yeah,
and they can feel free to just do that all game long. And that's what the NBA has become. The NBA has become a game where you have to be able to almost, like, guys, everyone's going to have to guard 1 through 5 at some point,
right?
Even if it's through a switch or
which
what have
you. Which was the edge the Celtics had on the Sixers for so long.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying, as far as getting beat up, I mean, with the four, there's some rebounding involved. He's going to be under the basket. You know, you're not going to be on the wing. You're able to ignite the fast break that way. You're going to be coming from deeper in. I mean, it's not that big a deal, but
no, I don't think it's gonna. I think you're looking too far.
Paul loves this,
and not only that, down the stretch, lineup will probably be. Well, yeah, and then down the stretch, you're gonna have to get Lou Will on the floor, so Lou Will's gonna have to play the two. So I mean, it's. But anyway, getting back to it, I can't think of a better defensive duo, as far as backwards go.
Yeah,
if you guys think you
know of a better defensive duo, you think someone can challenge?
I don't see them. You're wrong.
Yeah,
if you think so,
let us know. Comment. Let us know, because Paul already thinks you're wrong.
Decent ones. Like, Utah's got Conley and Mitchell. It's Conley decent. Mitchell. It's a decent defensive combo. I mean, there's some say what you will about, I know a lot of people don't like Lonzo, but if it's Drew and Lonzo, that's a pretty damn good defensive duo starting in the front and the backcourt for them.
It's funny you bring up the New Orleans Pelicans. I watched some of that game with them and the Atlanta Hawks. Mm. And I'm looking at Matisse, and I'm like, man, he's going to be like in that – five player, if the minutes are there, he could be in that five player mix for like rookie of the year.
I don't think he gets there only because I don't think he's going to score enough. I think he can score. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's like, and I still don't know what he is offensively.
You know what it is, though? You know what it is, though? Malcolm Brogdon helped me change a little bit of that because he didn't have, he had big shots and played big in big games for them. And that helped them edge out Dario Saric and Joel Embiid for rookie
year. Yeah, but neither of those guys was Zion Williamson. And Zion Williamson's probably going to play 80 games. And he's going to have a bunch of highlight reel dunks. And he's going to play really good defense.
All right. Now, in that game, though, DeAndre Hunter, bro. He
I
NBA.
Like DeAndre Hunter
I know you do. Man. And that he got the NBA ready body. He came out stroking the jumper just like the just like I saw him in the national championship. He was the same thing last night, bro. I'm not just BSing here. I looked at him last night. He was stroking the jumper. He looked confident. And for Zion and all that he does, I still think that it's not a runaway, you know, Rookie of the Year award this year. So I'm looking at DeAndre Hunter as a guy who can come in and make a difference.
Well, there's going to be guys like Darius Garland's going to probably put up a ton of points in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think
it's going to come down to points, though. I mean, if that was the case, Donovan Mitchell would have beat Ben Simmons. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's because Ben Simmons, like his the rest of his game
overall contribution
so much better than Donovan.
They could have co-MVP, co-Rookie of the Year did. But one winner.
That's such a cop out.
And not only that, you saw the vote. Simmons, it was a runaway. Simmons won that thing in a landslide.
Our producer, Vin Berry, letting everybody know that I need to be quiet.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say much today because I forgot to put lotion on, but that was out of pocket, what you just said.
Yeah, you do kind of look like Ashy Larry from
lost a fight to a powdered donut, man.
Chappelle Show. I'm just saying, it's just a fight that I feel like I'm going to be really, really interested in fight for the Rookie of the Year award. It's going to be fun, man. I'm just excited. Basketball's back, man.
But Matisse, man, you know who Embiid compared Matisse to Cove today? Compared him to Robert Covington today, which I thought was very interesting.
That is interesting. I have heard Brett say that before, or maybe someone asked Brett about that, and I heard him comment on it. I think Cove is an overachiever, where I feel like Matisse also has that gene in him, but obviously Cove kind of – they picked him off the scrap heap from the G League, and he came into his own as the MVP. I forget what season that was, but of the G League. But I don't think Matisse – needs to work as hard to be good, if that makes sense.
No, and he's already way ahead of the game than where Covington was, because he's going to be in a rotation, it looks like, for a team that has a chance to win the NBA Finals.
But I'm just saying, Cove, obviously, first team all defense.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
but I think, listen, I don't want to get ahead of myself, man, but this kid can freaking play, dude.
Yeah.
He looks like he's going to be.
But.
And
he will hit a wall at some
the
point.
Bench?
There will be a wall
absolutely.
At some point.
And that's why
so
you have
it'll be interesting to see how he responds.
You'll have a guy like Zaire, who, by the way, it did sound. I mean, Brett today at practice, Brett made it seem pretty clear that Zaire needs a little more time.
Mm-hmm.
He's not.
Oh,
he's not factoring
like G League more time.
I kind of got that. I mean, he didn't say that directly, but you got mm-hmm. the overall thing was he needs to play and he needs to work on some stuff. Not in like a detrimental way. Just saying like. Just because he lost an entire year, he's still only 20 years old, yada, yada, yada. So, but it clearly sounded like Matisse is getting the first crack at that spot, and Zaire's still got a little work to do. I also think, I got to bring this up, too, because he's our guy. We've talked about him on the podcast.
What?
Brett's been asked about
Shake.
How will Neto and Trey Burke often, and he has said, do not forget about Shake in that mix. And one thing I brought up, it's funny, though, Brett gave me a really short answer with it, which I was weirded out by because normally he gives very expansive answers.
Yeah.
And it was a legitimate question. I said, is there an appeal? Because, he brought up Shake, and I said, is there an appeal to maybe playing Shake at the one? Because Shake is 6'6", and he's long. So when you're taking Josh off the floor, your tallest player in the court or smallest player in the court is still 6'6", if you use Shake as your point guard. And he just said, yeah, that's a fair comment. And that was it. But the fact that he acknowledged, there's something appealing to the fact that you put another 6'6 guy out there and you keep you maintain that monstrosity.
Maybe
of the
maybe you were too far into his cerebellum. He didn't like that.
That's what I was wondering.
You've been looking at our practices. What you've been doing?
I had to spot a little too close.
Yeah, I think. Maybe because he didn't want to give anything away on that. Just like today, I had a shoot over at the Eagles practice facility and. Doug Peterson kicked us out and said, give me 10 more minutes. So we stood outside and waited because he didn't want us to see what he was doing. Mm. But you can always see what we're doing. Log on to NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. Subscribe to the Sixers Talk podcast or wherever you get your podcast. Keep those 5-star ratings going. Continue to comment and let us know how you feel. For Paul Hudrick, Ben Berry, our esteemed producer, who is very ashy today. I'm Danny Pommels. Thanks for listening to Sixers Talk. We're brought to you by Wilmington University. WilmU Works.